if you take one day off, it takes 2 days to get back to where you were, which is like a mindset that I carry with me when I'm working as an entrepreneur. So I don't take days off with Vatic Pro. Like, I'm on the clock every single day. And I think that's played a large part into the success of the company throughout the past year.
Hi, I'm Crystal Brown, your host. Vatic Pro pickleball paddles are some of the top carbon fiber paddles on the market, and at an incredible price. Daryl Wang started his company in 2022, and Vatic Pro has quickly become one of the most recognizable on the pickleball court. He shares what drove him to start this company alongside his father and brother, and shares some of what is in store for 2024. Okay, now to the show. Welcome to Simply Pickleball, the podcast where we discuss all things pickleball, the fastest growing sport in America and around the world. We are interviewing the founders, industry leaders, athletes, lovers of the sport that are driving the spectacular growth. If you love pickleball as much as we do, listen in. Awesome. Well, Daryl Wang, thank you so much for joining today. I'm really excited to talk to you about your company, Vatic, and your paddles and everything that goes into pickleball. But before we get too far into pickleball and paddles in particular, I'd love to learn a little bit about you in your sort of younger years. Were you always into sports? Were you always into business? You know, what was it like for you as a little kid growing up?
Yeah, so coincidentally, since I was a younger, sports and business were actually my two greatest interests. I grew up as a lifelong swimmer, a very competitive swimmer. I swim all throughout, like since I was very young until college. And then during college, I decided to major in finance. My dad was somewhat in the entrepreneurial, like manufacturing space, and I always found it very interesting and kind of wanted to follow in his footsteps. So naturally, I decided to major in finance and then kind of see where that would take me. Originally, though, I had kind of different plans for my career. I always thought entrepreneurship was extremely interesting and something that I wanted to pursue. But like the safe route as an Asian American was definitely to go into something like investment banking or a more traditional job, you know, where you could rely on a paycheck. But slowly, I was realizing after college, like as I was somewhat struggling to kind of enter that space because I didn't necessarily have the greatest grades or that many connections, you know, within the industry. And I think part of the reason was that in the back of my mind, like my passion was not actually in that space. So maybe like there was a part of me that knew I wanted to do something more entrepreneurial by myself. And that's where I kind of got into starting a business. So my first business, it was called ED Max International, which is the parent company for Vatic Pro. Coincidentally, it was nothing related to sports or anything at that time. It was more of like an educational consulting business where I was working with a lot of students internationally and helping them apply for schools in the US, like graduate programs, PhD programs, and undergrad.
How did you know that was a problem? Or, you know, why did you pick that space?
Yeah, so I felt like as an entrepreneur, providing value was somewhat interesting and like fulfilling as a individual for me. And then I kind of happened upon it. I like had interned for this one company during college that did something similar, and I felt that I was quite good at it. And I have pretty strong writing skills and like editing skills, as well as being able to like speak to the students about how they should, you know, approach that applications and whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's just during COVID, it was very, you know, in high demand, like that profession or that industry of sorts, because a lot of students were trying to leave Asia to go study in the US. And then so that's kind of like where I saw a niche and kind of just went with it at the time. I had plans to go to Asia for the longest time, but like China was always closed during COVID. So I could never like actually do it full time. Like I was just doing it remotely. But it turned out to kind of be a blessing in disguise because that's like around the time where I started playing pickleball.
Right.
And then, as we all know, I never look back after that.
Well, before we jump too far ahead, it's interesting. I think I mentioned this in every one of my episodes, is that I also was a swimmer and a competitive swimmer through college. And it's interesting that you say that because I think that kind of grit and determination and drive and getting up early and getting into the pool when it's cold and having to really stick with something that's kind of a alone, right? It's you in your head and swimming a lot. And it helped me get into college. Were it not for swimming, I'm not sure I would have been able to go where I went. So I understand that that's probably a precursor to your entrepreneurship, was all that you did with swimming.
Yeah, I think swimming taught me a lot of invaluable lessons, especially what a lot of people, like, I don't want to say like they don't know, but they underestimate kind of the work ethic that is required as an entrepreneur. And then there's this famous saying like that Michael Phelps would always preach, is that if you take one day off, it takes 2 days to get back to where you were, which is like a mindset that I carry with me when I'm working as an entrepreneur. So I don't take days off with Vatic Pro. Like, I'm on the clock every single day. And I think that's played a large part into the success of the company throughout the past year.
Yeah, I think that word grit, that you know, really having that grit and ready to grind. So when did you first, or how did you hear of pickleball to begin with? Where were you? What were you doing before that?
Yeah, so it's a somewhat coincidental. I heard through pickleball from my dad, because I was living with my dad at the time, and then he lives right next to a community park that's the largest pickleball, like, permanent courts in my neighborhood. And then he kept egging me to go try it with him because he didn't really want to go alone. And I thought it was somewhat stupid because of the name, and I didn't know how to play. And I was like playing tennis a little bit at the time and doing other sports. And then one day I finally just went with him. I didn't have the greatest time playing. I thought it was, you know, a little underwhelming, because part of the reason was we didn't know like what the rules were or anything, and we were just playing singles. And then a few months later, my girlfriend like asked me to play with her and her friends. And then after that, like, we played doubles and I had a really good time. Like, just the competitive aspect of it was very appealing to me at the time. And then slowly after that, I started playing more and more. And then very quickly into it, I decided to, you know, start this pickleball business.
You know, again, kind of going back for a minute, I agree with you. A lot of people graduate from college and they don't really know what they want to do. And going into finance is one option, just like, you know, going to law school or medical school. It's hard to know what you want to do. But pivoting to be an entrepreneur, you have to have kind of a spark. And so you're on track with one business. It's going well. And what did you see, or what made you think, hey, I'm going to start a whole nother business? Right? Because you could have kept doing what you were doing, right?
Yeah. So part of the reason I started a business was just having an eye for the opportunity, I would say, was a big factor at the time. So it was nothing more than just seeing, especially like the carbon fiber paddle market. I went to upgrade my paddle. I was using like these Amazon paddles at the time, and a lot of people out at the park were using the Yula paddles. And I saw like they had the carbon fiber grid, and I was like, oh, how do I get that? And then after researching online, they're like $200, $250. And I wasn't ready to, you know, spend that much on a sport that I was hardly playing. And then I thought to myself, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here. And then so I approached my dad. I was like, hey, maybe there's something we can do here, since he had spent so much time working in manufacturing. And then after he spent some time looking for, you know, a manufacturer in China to, and how much these actually cost to make, we decided that it was like worth, you know, at least trying.
Right. What was his background in manufacturing? Did he ran a business? Like, he understood the industry in China and also here, because that must be really helpful for you.
Yeah. So during my teenage years, he was working at a larger company in the U.S. as kind of their representative between China and the U.S. So they were manufacturing pharmaceutical goods. And so he was kind of the lead buyer, where he would have to, you know, make these purchase orders and go to China and check out the factories to see if everything was running smoothly, and then create the orders for them and then make sure everything arrived, you know, kind of like that sort of deal.
Yeah.
Somewhat of like what an agent would do in the pickleball scene. And then, yeah.
So he was helpful. Like, you immediately had a resource that you could kind of lean on to say, like, okay, we want to know how these are made. Because what I've heard about manufacturing abroad is that it really is about connections and contacts and understanding which manufacturing plants always produce great products and which of them don't. And you kind of have to know the difference and also find connections there.
Yeah, it's very difficult, because to the untrained eye, there are a lot of agents kind of posing as manufacturers, which is probably the largest issue, because they're taking a pretty large cut of each of your orders. And then that leads to, you know, you not being able to provide that discount to the customer. So as a company, all of our savings from not having one go directly to the consumer.
That's amazing. Was that the kind of moment was, I want to provide a really great paddle that's as good as the top end, but I don't think the average player needs to be paying what they're paying, because you really have a name for that now. And I was wondering if that was your original vision.
Yeah, that 100% was our original vision. It's nice to see that we've, you know, been able to make an impact in this space throughout the time that we've been in business. It started with a very simple idea and we've kind of just ran with that.
That's amazing. I actually was playing yesterday with my Vatic. I do actually play with one. And I was playing against two people and they said, they actually commented that they felt they had to replace their paddle on a regular basis. And they felt like Vatic was just as good and, you know, if not better than the competition. So let's backtrack again. I keep bringing you back to, so you and your dad think about starting this paddle company and then what happens? I mean, again, like a lot of people have ideas and they don't execute on them. So, you know, you could have even just done the research and let that, you know, sit for a while.
Yeah. So one of the things when I look back on when we started this company is that we didn't waste a single day between having the idea and then working towards creating an actual product. So we pretty much created the brand Vatic Pro as it is today through all that, you know, making a name like a website and then a logo, which wasn't amazing at the time, but we just got the ball rolling. And then we had our first like very small orders where we just had a pretty poor paddle design, but we just wanted to like play with them, you know, because we thought it was the coolest thing in the world to have our own paddles.
So you put it out on the market and on Amazon or just on your site and you started getting orders?
Yeah. So we first put it on our website and then we also listed on Amazon shortly after, and we weren't getting orders, you know, in the traditional sense. It was like we had some friends and family buy them and then maybe like the one-off random stranger would buy a paddle and it would be like the most exciting thing.
Oh yeah. Like the bell ringing. You're like, yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. It was like the best feeling ever when someone bought our paddle. And then it kind of went after that because of our technology, which wasn't very known at the time. But what people now know as thermoforming, we were one of the very early adopters of that technology, which played a vital role in kind of snowballing our brand as well as our sales through media attention.
Yeah. So tell me about that. How did you decide how to construct your paddle to begin with? You know, what did you immediately see that you wanted to do or replicate or, you know, do better?
Yeah, so the technology at the time, we were still learning about it, but we knew that there were certain types of paddles that were a lot cheaper to make, and then there were more, you know, kind of complex technology within paddles, which is thermoforming, so the steps to create it are a lot more complex. And we knew that in order to kind of make a difference in the industry, we wanted to not only have an affordable price, but also technology that was above, you know, the standards here. And then we worked with the factory for a few weeks to see like things that they were working on and what we could implement into our first paddle. And that just happened to be the thermoforming process. And we went with that for all of our paddles.
That's so interesting, because it's funny that you said you started with an Amazon paddle, which what everybody refers to the paddles, but they're actually not made by Amazon. We just all buy them on Amazon. But when I started playing, I had a fiberglass, you know, paddle. And it wasn't until I went to a Level Up pickleball camp and they had a whole bunch of paddles we could try, but they were all 250 plus, you know, to buy. And they were telling us, which I agree with, is that really you do need a carbon fiber if you're going to get to that next level. But again, I didn't really know what the options were. And so it's interesting to me that you figured out sort of right away that you wanted thermoform. Was that something that you had thought about and researched, or was the manufacturing kind of bringing to you ideas about how to make the best paddle?
Yeah, it's a combination of both. So there were paddles that had similar technology in the past. Like they would never advertise as thermoforming, but if you look at some of like the older Selkirk Lab models, all of those paddles were thermoformed. And then it's the manufacturer had actually used this technology several years back, but there were some kinks within it that led to it not being created on a wider scale. And it never picked up traction with some of the brands that try to use it. And it was just fortunate timing. Do you know what those
kinks were? It just wasn't well constructed, or the thermoform didn't work well. Like what was holding them up?
Yeah. So there were some, first it was them not having enough, you know, machinery to make it on a larger scale. And then it was just something with the heat affecting the play of the paddle. Like there's still an issue called delamination. I'm sure you've heard of it.
I do want to talk to you about that. If you don't mind digging into that a little bit, explaining this issue with delamination. It comes up actually a lot, even on the rec courts now.
Yeah.
So I'm curious.
Yeah. So basically that issue is derived from when they're cutting the cores and then wrapping the paddles. Like the honeycomb is not cut perfectly into, say, let's say you have a 16 millimeter paddle, that PP is not cut perfectly into 16 millimeters. And then when there's air like between the core and then the carbon fiber surface, and then you're repeatedly hitting it, it causes damage to the structure of the core. And that's kind of accelerated by the heating process that they were using previously, where it would damage the core and make it brittle, like, or make it more prone to being, you know, crushed prior to being played with.
Right.
And then, so that's just the problem that we see today. And we've come a long way. Like that problem is a lot more rare now than it was. But
I understood that, like, it's basically the glue coming apart, the delamination. And the only way you know that happens is, unless you're really, really probably like you would know, but for the average user, that the ball, it flies off like faster than it should, or, you know, maybe just if you can describe what happens when the paddles delaminate. I know there was some issue with Ben Johns. You can share.
Yeah. What we call it delamination, but it's actually the wrong term to use for the issue. It's actually the core crushing. So it has nothing to do with the glue of the carbon fiber. It's just the plastic core, like indenting a little, so it'll become a little bit squishier. You know, when you press your thumb into it, it won't be a solid, you know, top layer. And then so when it's a little bit squishy, it has a trampoline effect when you're hitting the ball, which leads it to become a lot more powerful than it was originally intended. And that's mainly caused by how the thermoforming process increases surface tension by quite a bit for all of these paddles.
Hey, pickleballers, Crystal Brown here from Simply Pickleball, the ultimate channel for everything pickleball. If you're passionate about the fastest growing sport in America, you're in the right place. We have been fortunate enough to sit down with some incredible personalities in the pickleball world. From pro players sharing their climb to winning gold, to the founders and industry leaders shaping the game. We're bringing you the inside scoop about what makes pickleball the incredible phenomenon it is today. But here's the thing, we need your support to keep the pickleball party going strong. Subscribing to our channel not only helps keep you in the loop with the latest news, tips, and highlights, but it also helps us to continue to produce amazing content just for you. Our community is made up of pickleball enthusiasts just like you, players of all types, skill levels, and ages. Or maybe you just love to watch the game. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started, we've got something for everyone. So, how can you join the pickleball party and support Simply Pickleball? It's as easy as hitting that subscribe button. Don't forget to turn on your notifications so you never miss out on the action. By subscribing, you're not only becoming part of our community, you're helping us grow and bring you even more exciting content, interviews, and stories from the heart of the pickleball world. Thank you so much for being part of Simply Pickleball, where the love of pickleball has no boundaries. Subscribe now, hit the subscribe button, and let's keep the pickleball passion alive together. I mean, maybe this is a dumb question, but like, why wouldn't you want it to go much faster? Like, maybe that's a good thing. I'm curious why. I mean, everyone wants to hit a little bit harder and more powerful.
Yeah. So we originally made thermoform paddles to be on the upper echelon of the USAP limit. We love having a power paddle and customers love that as well. But after delamination, it's quite a bit past what the limit is for USAP testing, which makes it tournament illegal. And at the speed of which it plays when it's heavily delaminated, it's quite dangerous, I would say, especially for your average player. It leads to, you know, some balls flying off the paddle in the way that you are not intending, and it could hit someone, you know, in the eye.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, so how would a rec player know? Is delamination something that would only happen during the you know, creation process or manufacturing process, or does it later happen that it can become delaminated while you're playing with it?
Yeah, typically it will happen after you play with it for a significant amount of time. I wouldn't even say it happens early on. It happens usually later on in the paddle's life through repeated play, you know, especially if you're hitting the same spot in that core over and over, it does begin to have a trampoline effect if it wasn't, you know, made to spec. And then they would know that it's delaminated because of the sound. The sound, in my opinion, is the largest giveaway. It just sounds a bit more hollow than when you originally start using the paddle. And then if you press your thumbs into like the sweet spot of the paddle, you'll feel a little bit of give, which is indicating that the honeycomb has a bit of a trampoline effect. And that usually indicates that there's something wrong with the paddle.
Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry to go so deep into dealing, but I think it's a really interesting subject. And I do think that a lot of both rec and tournament and pros are very interested in that kind of, sometimes when you're being, when you're playing against someone, you kind of wonder, like, that just seems a little off. I was mentioning in another episode that I feel like there's going to need to be some kind of x-ray so people can just stick their paddle in and then figure out, is it all good? Am I all good? Okay. So you're, so back to thermoforming, you figured out that's what you wanted to create and that's the type of paddle. And then as an entrepreneur, there's a saying that I've used many times, which is done is better than perfect, that if you're, or, and also if you're not embarrassed by your first product, then you waited too long. So you said you were not, you didn't love your first logo and your first paddle, but so how quickly did you start making changes and getting feedback? Like, how did you know what the next version was going to be?
Yeah. So we like, that's a great way to put it, is like, I'm quite embarrassed in like a, you know, I can laugh at it way of our first design. And it wasn't really till a few months after that I was getting some, you know, crucial feedback. Like, there will always be people emailing me, you know, like, why does it look like you made the text with, you know, Microsoft Word? Like, why isn't Times New Roman? But I guess the straw that broke the camel's back that made us change, like, rebrand was a lawsuit from another company for our logo. So I was like, that's, you know, the perfect time to kind of rebrand and then make it a lot better than it was. So you take that opportunity as something good.
Yeah. So wait, so someone, another paddle company said you were copying their branding or their paddle design?
No, not the paddle design. They were just saying that our logo was confusingly similar to theirs.
Okay.
And then we just rebranded just to play it safe, you know?
Yeah. But and those are things early on, you know, in even with websites, you tend to build many different websites and looks and you learn something every time. So what was the first paddle that I would say you're less embarrassed about, that you came out and you were like, all right, we got our first one. I'm really happy with it.
Yeah. So the redesigned V7 and the Flash 14 millimeters, we used to only have those two paddles and I was extremely happy with how they turned out. This was towards the beginning of this year when we first released the new iterations with our new logo. And I think they looked very clean and that's still what we use today. So
very happy with that. It's crazy though, Daryl, because I feel like your brand has been around a long time. I mean, a lot of people know about your brand and you keep saying like earlier this year, like, I can't believe that it was just last year, but you now have moved on to a few other paddles. So you have five paddles right now?
We have technically like eight different paddles, but that's just with different thicknesses and whatnot.
Right. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And so what's your best seller? What do most people buy?
Yeah, I think what we're known for and the paddle that really like blew us up was the Prism Flash 16 millimeter. Like, we knew the Prism was going to be a huge disruptor in the industry because it's like by far the best paddle that you can buy for under $100. And that's what we intended to do. Like, we wanted to kind of like stretch it and just see how good we could make a paddle for that price. It's caught a lot of traction and it's definitely our best seller.
So keeping it under $100, are you making less money or are you able to just keep your cost of goods low? You know, how are you able to do that?
Yeah, we're definitely making less money than other companies per paddle. So it's just more of like a business approach, what you want to do. We want to play to our competitive advantages, right? Whereas we don't have to pay any additional fees with an agent. We're direct with the factory and our cost of goods is 100% lower than other companies. Like, we do a lot of things to save cost as well, just so we can provide that discount back to the customers. Like, for example, everything's done out of my dad's garage. So we don't have like a warehouse or anything. And then it's a family business. So my brother's the one shipping all the paddles and I'm like on the emails just so like we can have that discount for the customers and maintain that price point.
That's awesome, by the way. Congratulations on all your everything, all your success. But it's really nice to have a family business. And you're not the only paddle manufacturer I've talked to that has a lot of family members involved. So I think it's also really nice to have your family and great support from your dad. You can blame him, too. If it wasn't for him dragging you to the courts, then...
definitely, 100%.
You can give him credit and also blame him. But when you first started selling, and I know a lot about e-commerce... I mean, a lot of people put websites up and they put their stuff on Amazon. And it doesn't sell because nobody knows it's there and they don't know how to list well on Amazon or they don't know how to do advertising. So how did you start selling your paddles?
Yeah, so that was the hurdle that we first had is like, how do we get this into people's hands? Like, I know we have a great product and it's cool and all, but how do we get it out there? And luckily for us, the pickleball scene is very new still. And customers are constantly on the search for new products and new paddles. So it's actually something that they look forward to versus other industries where people tend to stick with what they know. And a large factor in our success was through pickleball influencers. Whereas, for example, a pickleball studio, pickleball will, a pickleball effect, they have a very niche audience that kind of dictates, you know, what paddles are like, and you know, they basically kind of drive consumer attention in a way. And we were fortunate enough that they got their hands on our paddles back in the day when thermoforming was just starting, and they very much liked the technology that us and several other companies were using. And that was all the traction that we needed back in the day to kind of get the ball rolling. And then from there we just continued to make good products at a reasonable price, and eventually consumers caught on and they appreciated that and started buying our stuff.
So that first sale, when you see the ding and the email, like, what are you doing now? Are you getting hundreds, thousands? Like, how many people are buying your paddles every day? And is your brother, does your brother have enough time to ship them out every day?
Yeah, I can't say the exact number, but we're selling a decent amount of paddles, I think. It's just enough where we are busy throughout the day. It's not too much that we're overwhelmed, but it definitely keeps us busy and it gives us something to look forward to each day where we get to collaborate and work together. And then Amazon is a big reason why we're able to sell more than just our capacities, because they fulfill a lot of our paddles for us. And then it makes it a lot easier, even though it's a huge like love hate with Amazon. I'm sure you know, because like there's a lot out of your control, but they also do a lot for you. So you kind of have to live with it.
Yes. I mean, it's the kind of the devil, you know, it's, I mean, I think a lot of businesses and a lot of pickleball businesses that I've talked to feel the same way, that it's just a huge audience and a lot of people are used to buying there. So, but you still need to know what you're doing, even on Amazon, how you list. And also, like you said, having promotion outside of Amazon, then people go to Amazon to look for your paddles. So I imagine it's both for you. What other kinds of marketing? So you have the influencers. Are you doing any other kind of marketing with your paddles?
To be honest, we don't really do that much like paid advertising, whether it's on, you know, Instagram, Facebook, or Google. We'll like promote one of our Instagram posts every once in a while. But I think the greatest driver of our sales is organic marketing. We have a very large ambassador program. It's kind of something that everyone can sign up for and then feel like they're a part of the company. And like it's that. Our program is more like you can do whatever you like with it. Like you can be as involved as you want, basically, or you can not be involved at all and just take that discount and buy a paddle, which is more than enough, you know, like it's even someone representing and using a paddle is good. We have over 1,000 ambassadors in pretty much every continent. And then a lot in scattered throughout the US. And that's a great organic driving force of our sales every day is people, you know, get to give others their discount code and feel like they're a part of the team, which is great. And then their customers get to save a little bit. Yep. I think organic growth has been huge for us throughout this year as well.
Yes. Well, we are very happy. People can get that in our show notes, and also hopefully they'll subscribe to this so they can hear all of our episodes. But I completely think that's, you know, a really good tactic, because word of mouth is something that is huge, and that goes a long way. And you mentioned that, I've heard you say this on another podcast, that you answer all the emails yourself and that you manage all the customer service. Are you still doing that?
No. Thank goodness I'm not. I don't really miss those days. It just gets really hectic. I do have a full-time customer service rep who helps me out with that. We work closely. I still read all the emails, although I don't answer all of them myself. I would say I'm doing probably around 50% of the emails still. So it's nice to have a little burden off of you so you can focus on other like revenue driving aspects.
Yeah, that is the entrepreneur story also, is that you do it yourself until you get big enough where you can maybe bring on a great person to support you, but you know what to tell them to do because you've been doing it yourself. One other sort of anecdote in that space, and I was curious if you had any kind of models for how you wanted to run your business, because I don't know if you remember Tony Hsieh, who started Zappos. He has a book called Delivering Happiness, and in the book he says that they had a rule that they had to answer every single customer inquiry within 10 minutes, no matter mm-hmm. when it was. So they would stay up all night making sure that they responded.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I know. But what's amazing is that they were well known for having really good customer service. And I think that speaks to your tactic of having ambassadors and people who feel part of the company and feel like they're being treated well by the company if they have a problem. So I think that's a good theory that you're responding to all the emails. Have you had most people happy with the paddles, or did people, you know, is there anything that helped you maybe figure out what you wanted to build next from customer feedback?
Yeah, I think people are generally very happy with our paddles, especially given the price to quality ratio. I mean, of course there's going to be angry customers every now and then, but you kind of learn to take that as constructive. And then I will say a lot of the issues that customers come into are completely out of our control. Like United States Postal Service is just a nightmare sometimes. And it's just stuff like that. But their customer feedback is very important, especially like knowing your audience and what they are looking for in a paddle. So that's definitely feedback that we take very strongly when we're making the next iterations of our paddles.
Yeah. So what is coming up next? Do you have any new paddles coming out? You know, we're recording now in November of 2023, but do you have plans for the end of this year or beginning of 24?
Yeah, we have a roadmap to have a new launch for, this is going to be quite a few paddles at the beginning of next year. So around January's time. And I think people will be very happy with it. We're still, you know, figuring all the kinks of the technology and finalizing things. But I can just say that people are definitely going to have something to be excited about when we announce it.
Oh, that's so awesome. I can't wait. I hope we'll get you back on again and then talk about more of your paddles. But I mean, I can tell you that I think everyone's really happy with your paddles. And do you watch and listen to the discussions on Reddit or Discord and kind of take into consideration what people are saying about you and your paddles? Not so much, don't take it personally, but about mm-hmm. your paddles.
Yeah. I'm very active in the Pickleball Studio Discord, where we have our own channel with some of our loyal customers come in and ask questions and give feedback. And then I'm also a pretty avid Reddit user. I tend to stay, like, not spend too much time on like Reddit or Facebook, because those opinions are quite polarizing sometimes. But I do know that if there's ever a post on Reddit asking for like under $100 paddle recommendations, like, our paddle is typically strongly recommended in that post, which is good.
Yeah, it is fantastic. So what about sponsoring a pro? And what do you think about that? I mean, I know it's only one path, but I'm curious what your thoughts are and if you've ever considered it.
Yeah, I think I've spoken a little bit about this before, but I'm very like on one end of the spectrum when it comes to sponsoring pros. I would say, especially because looking at it from a business perspective, and especially as a small business, I would say that having one or two pros is quite important in getting your reputation out there. But each pro that you sign after that has significantly diminishing returns, because if you look at tournament results and then tournament viewership as a whole, it tends not to be very large when compared to other outlets. Like if you watch a PPA live stream, there will probably be 2,000 viewers at any given moment, which is very small. And on top of that, like, is your player going to be on center court, and are people even going to be able to see the paddle? You know, so I think having, you know, if you have like a Ben Johns and you can afford a Ben Johns, it's going to be huge for your sales. But as a smaller company, you kind of have to like play to your strengths. And while I would love to sign as many players as I can, because working with pros is some of the most fun that I have with my job, it's not economically feasible for the most part.
Yeah. Why is it fun? Or what do you like about working with them?
Well, it's just cool, like, you know, because their lives are like, you know, pretty interesting, you know. They're going to pickleball tournaments every few weeks, and there's always some drama, you know, or some news going on within the pro scene that it's kind of funny to hear about when it's not one of your pros.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean,
what about international? You mentioned international, and I've been curious about this because, you know, some of the other manufacturers talk about what's going on in Asia or parts of Australia, Canada, Europe. What are you seeing internationally, and how much do you focus your time on international sales?
Yeah, so while I don't really have the resources to focus myself on international sales that much, we have a handful of partners that we work very closely with in some of the more emerging regions when it comes to pickleball. So for example, for Canada, we work exclusively with Rackets and Runners, who is an online retailer, and then they're able to provide all of our customers in Canada with free shipping, which we would not be able to do ourselves. And it's getting very popular over there for good reason. And then I'm hearing, you know, stories of how it's very popular in the UK. We have a partner there as well. And then it's kind of trickling from the UK out to the other parts of Europe. And then not super surprisingly, but it's very popular in Southeast Asia, whether it's like the Singapore, the Philippines, Vietnam, they love it over there.
And I've heard that actually. And so is that harder? I mean, is that business, you know, sort of, again, you'd have to find the right partner to work with over there.
Yeah, it's very difficult working over there just because, you know, economically they're average incomes in that region and the cost of living is quite low. So what we might not think much of, $150 for a paddle there, it's quite a big deal for those customers over there. So it's not entirely feasible when you were looking at larger quantities of paddles being sold, but it's definitely nice to, you know, maybe provide a facility with several demos just so they can play with our paddle. You know, they don't need to buy one, just play with it, and then maybe later down the road they will start buying them.
So, would you say then the majority of your sales are still U.S. because you're small and you just can only focus on so much?
Yeah, I would say a vast majority of our sales are in the U.S. I would say that probably extends to most companies too.
Yeah. Well, it's bigger here. I mean, I think, like you said, I feel like it could be just as big, certainly in Asian countries and maybe around, I've heard it's actually big in India too, but same issue where not everyone has the means to afford a $150 paddle. So, and I've heard you say, again, I think it's really interesting as an entrepreneur that you really wanted to provide a value paddle, a paddle that everyone could, you know, afford supposedly, right? Or assume that anyone that is looking in this market, that it's a great, because people have to buy a paddle more than once a year if they play a lot. Like, it's different than some sports, like even skiing or tennis or golf or some of these sports where people make one big investment every few years, if that. I feel like people are buying paddles like running shoes every 3, 4, or 5 months.
Mm-hmm. I know, like, I mean, coming from the swimming industry, right, we had to buy suits, racing suits every, you know, couple months if you're doing a lot of meets. And then so that's the thing with pickleball, is that there definitely is a need for having a value proposition. There are a lot of consumers that have multiple paddles, you know, just like the paddle nerds who will have a lot. Our target audience is more of like the recreational audience versus the tournament audience. We're just targeting a lot of people who are upgrading from their first, let's say, Amazon paddle, and they want something that they can maybe use for an extended amount of time. not forever, but just something so they can have a competitive paddle for as long as they're playing the sport for the next, you know, 6 months to a year. And then that will give them the time to know whether they want to do something like get something nicer, you know, maybe a little bit more expensive, or just stick with that. And there was definitely a need for that back then.
Yeah. So fast forward a little bit, you started it thinking, gosh, there's a hole in the market. There really needs to be a great paddle that's a better value. How is it feeling now? I mean, there's a new paddle company every week I hear about. At the same time, the number of players are growing. So it's like the pie is getting huge just as fast. So, or maybe not. No, I would say there's more players coming in all the time than there are paddle companies. But how does it feel as a business owner to think about your competition and what's going on out there?
Yeah, so I'm very thankful every day that I started last year and not this year. It's extremely competitive in the paddle space these days, especially among the niche that we're in with basic carbon face, you know, affordable paddles. I think it's definitely gotten more competitive. And our main advantage is that we have a very trustworthy brand name that people resonate with in this space. And that's all due to our hard work throughout this past year. If I started today, you know, I'm not entirely sure how I would be able to differentiate this company versus others, because a lot of paddles are similar. And not only that, it's hard to market your competitive advantages these days to customers because they're very non-trusting, just because there's so much marketing jargon out there. And a lot of the time it's, you know, kind of just BS, I would say.
Well, so you get up every morning and you said it's exciting. So what is exciting to you now? I mean, because, you know, now you've been grinding for a while, right? You put out your paddle. It was exciting to get a few first orders. But now, I mean, it's a real business and you're not that old. I mean, you're old enough to run a business. And what about the business keeps motivating you? Or like, you know, where do you kind of get your energy to keep going every day working on the business?
Yeah, it's more of back then where I would be like, how can I, you know, grow this business into something more significant and established, versus these days, I'm like, how can I grow this business smartly, but also not mess it up at the same time? Because as there are more eyeballs on the brand and whatnot, like each product that you release is going to be more heavily scrutinized, and you always want to measure up your new products with your last. And I think that's one of my largest motivators, but also, you know, something that excites me is kind of working with the team on how we can develop something that's even better than what people already love, and like providing something that, you know, is just of the quality that we stand for. And I think that's very exciting. And I'm someone who doesn't mind, you know, spending a vast majority of my time working. I would say I'm probably one of those people that, you know, lives to work. So
we have a lot in common, Daryl. I didn't know that, but I feel like it must be the swimming. It's like, there's just something in that you have to have this motivation internally. Like, I knew I was never going to go to the Olympics, but I still got up every morning and swam for 2 hours and then went back in the afternoon.
And did it again in the afternoon, yeah.
But I think that's a really good perspective, I think, to think about, like, what can you continue to do better? Or, you know, there are companies and products like Converse shoes or Air Jordans that they created something really great and people have still want them as they were, you know, with small tweaks. So, you know, the trick is to stay relevant and stay, you know, up to date on everything that you're doing. So I think you have your eye set on the right thing. And I think, I mean, I love working, so I kind of think it's fun. But again, like, you do have to balance it. I don't know if you like to play pickleball as much as you like to work on the paddles, but having time to kind of get out there and feel the energy, or do you go to any of the tournaments just to kind of have your ear to the ground or get out to different courts to hear what people are talking about?
Yeah, I do play a fair amount, probably 3 or 4 times a week, not nearly as much as I used to. I used to play every day when I was first starting the company. Yeah. I was just at Nationals this past week. So I go to all the local tournaments, like the ones near my area where I don't have to fly. And then I will go to some of the larger ones like Nationals, even if I have to fly out, just because it's very important to kind of be boots on the ground and see what people are saying and thinking, and also meet up with the pro players to see, you know, how they're feeling, like what's going on with the PPA or MLP. It all plays a part in building a brand and like knowing what's going on with the business is key. That's why, like, it's sometimes tough though, because if I go on like a 3-day trip, I feel like I'm missing out on so much work that I could be doing, you know, like at home. But it's all a balance act for sure.
Yeah, I totally understand. Again, I ran an e-commerce business in a subscription box. But on the other hand, we would sometimes go to conferences and I would come back with kind of some new ideas, not just kind of refreshed lens. So it's probably good to do a little bit of both. But, you know, so you mentioned your team, it must be growing. You studied business, you were thinking about business, you've been now running a business for a few years. So you have a good sense. But this could be enormous. This could be something you sell, that you could go into other sports. You know, you're a driven person. So where do you sort of want this to go? Or, you know, maybe that's too far to look ahead, but I'm curious, like, what do you see in the future for Vatic?
Yeah, there's so many places that it could go. Like, it's obviously very nice to dream. Let's say, like, sometimes if I'm really stressed, like, hey, maybe someone will buy the company next week and I'll never have to work again, you know?
Right.
Like, there have been inquiries about, you know, purchasing the brand, but I don't think I would lean in that direction just quite yet because of how much fun I'm having working, you know, along with my dad and my brother. I do want to be in this pickleball space for as long as I can, you know? It's very hard to plan in the future in this space because things are changing so rapidly. And we've all seen companies that were established a few years ago kind of fizzle out this year and the past year. So it's just something that you kind of have to keep in mind. Like, while it's great to be optimistic, it's also important to be realistic. And I think if we continue to innovate and launch new products, I think my goal right now is just to be, you know, still in the topic of conversation when it comes to the best paddles and pickleball, not only just with value, but also like quality, just quality, like play. And then that's kind of my goal for the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. Even like, it's very hard for me to look that long term just because it's pickleball and it's not an established industry. But if everything goes well, then I'm confident that we can, you know, do it right over that span of time.
Well, first of all, I think you have achieved that, not just value. I mean, I think that's a good place to start, that's why you came into it. But I think people talk about your paddles as just being great paddles, regardless of the price. At least, you know, that's my ear to the ground. And I do think you're right. I mean, I wouldn't have started this podcast or even our website if I didn't think that there was going to be interest in content around pickleball. I do think that's growing. And also, I think the education, people really need to understand why they should be choosing a good paddle and how that can change the game. So I think you're doing a really good job. What about learning to run a business? What were the pieces of learning that maybe you still have blind spots on, or that you really realized you were great at, that you were like, wow, I didn't realize I was, you know, you've been able to apply it? It's, again, different than maybe working for an investment bank, which sounds awful to me, but
yeah,
I have friends that are investment bankers. I'm sorry. I'll apologize to you, but it sounds awful to me. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. I think running a business is probably the hardest thing that you can do. For me, I'm someone that like just goes and learns by doing. I'm not a book person by any means. So I've learned all the lessons that I have throughout this journey kind of from failure. Like, there were some moments, like, let's take the design example for experience. And then that kind of leads you to make the better decision next time. Like, I take all of the failures to heart. And I think one of the most crucial things that's been there in my business journey is having my dad kind of keep me grounded, because I'm still like I'm still a young adult kind of running a very fast growing business. So it's hard to stay grounded a lot of the time because there's so many things going on. But as someone who's done that, he's able to kind of like reassure me during times that are tough. And then also motivate me, you know, when maybe I'm being too lazy. And then that all plays a big role in how I approach my business. I try to think about it from, you know, like a more mature perspective.
He's sort of a mentor, and he can also humble you and motivate you. That's a really special relationship. Not everyone could work with their parent, much less, you know, hang out with their parent. So it's a really special relationship that you guys have.
Yeah, we're extremely close. And then I think that's, working with him is one of the best parts of, like, you know, having this business for sure.
So does he actually work on it daily, or is he more of a you know, kind of on the sidelines?
Well, he works entirely behind the scenes. So like no one even knows his name or anything, but like he's working just as hard as I am for sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he works into the night, you know, just because of the time difference in China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we all stay busy.
That is really amazing. And I think for the listeners and for people that have your paddle, I just think hearing from you directly that what you're trying to do is, you know, you're not just trying to sell a widget. Like you take this very personally and you want to put out a really good product. Where do you hope pickleball goes? I mean, what do you imagine? I can share just that in San Francisco, we have only 11 dedicated courts right now. And there are like hundreds and thousands of people trying to get it. There's people have built bots so that they can get the courts reserved. I mean, it's just, it's like out of control. All they need to do is build some more courts. But so here and in LA, I know that I have some friends in parts of LA that say there's not enough courts. And in New York, they're fighting over who gets to use what basketball courts. So obviously it's growing, but you know, where do you see if there was any like sport or just where do you see it going? Because again, you're going to be able to take advantage of that growth.
Yeah. So I have my realistic opinion on where pickleball is. And then obviously a very optimistic one. So my hope for pickleball is that, you know, it becomes an Olympic sport, a collegiate sport. I think that would be so awesome, not only for selfish reasons, but also just because there are a lot of kids that play pickleball, you know, and they very much enjoy it. You know, it's a nice, fun, like somewhat safe sport that you can play with your friends. And then if you're good, you know, that you should have the opportunity to pursue that at the highest level, just as we did with swimming. I think that would be very awesome for colleges. Like almost every college or large school now has a club already. Yeah.
Yes. I talked to in another episode, I talked to someone from Duper and he mentioned that they're really trying, they're giving scholarships like $1,000 to every school to have a club. And then, yeah, I've been hearing that it's really exciting growth. So you're right. It could be Olympic sport, college sport, youth sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that's optimistic, but I think realistically pickleball becomes like a very popular recreational sport. But the pro scene requires some major changes. And I'm not sure like exactly where that direction will go. Like it's, for example, like for me, it's so fun to play. Like playing pickleball is awesome. But watching pickleball like on stream, like the pro PPA tournament, is kind of a bit of like if you've seen one of them, you've seen them all. You know, like this guy gets eliminated in the quarters. Like this guy out in the semis and Ben Johns wins in the finals.
Right, right. Randomly.
Yeah, like it's that model is not necessarily sustainable as a viewer. I'm sure they have some, you know, great changes going forward. And MLP is a nice refresh on that, but it's very hard to market it as a pro sport. I think partially because of the style of the game, it's quite slow.
Yeah.
Not great feats of athletic display because while we know it as pickleball players, the average person wouldn't. And the sports that are most popular to viewers tend to be something that we ourselves cannot do. Like the Tour de France is the most watched sporting event just because of how difficult it is. And no one in their right mind would ever be able to complete it. But as a pickleball viewer, you're kind of like, hey, I could, you know, maybe do that. You're like, give me a year, I'll be able to totally be right there. So which kind of dilutes the experience.
That's really insightful, Daryl. I have my father is a cyclist and he's 83 nice. And he still competes in something called the Mark Leville Death Ride. But more interestingly, he watches every bit of the Tour de France. I don't know that many people that watch it as like diligently as he does. But I think you're right. You could see someone playing pickleball, even Annalie and Ben Johns, and it doesn't seem that different from how you're playing. Of course, we don't play like that, but we think that it's not that different. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, and to where it goes professionally or in the Olympic will be really interesting to see. And although I do think that the amateur tournament world is really growing too, and that is really exciting that people have a renewed sense of competing. I have not wanted to compete since college at all. And now I do want to compete more, not, you know, just for fun compete, but I think that there may be more and more players. And again, I think that the only thing you can really buy to play this sport that you need is a paddle. And we do need to replace them every so often. So I think your market will be expanding. And even though it's competitive, you sort of think like, wow, it would be, you know, you feel like you model your behavior after. I know you said that you mostly do things by feel, but I'm just curious.
Yeah. There are definitely like businessmen that I think are very insightful and have, you know, great qualities about how they operate. Like, for example, Mark Cuban is probably one of them. And then I very much enjoy, like, you know, some of the older Steve Jobs speeches about, yeah, you know, how businesses are run and whatnot. But there's no one that I really look up to, per se. Like, no posters on my wall of anyone.
Just your dad helping you. Well, you've done a lot of things that, you know, I've been around startups for a long time and e-commerce businesses, and you've been doing a lot of the right things. So especially even your focus on the ambassador program is a really smart way, because word of mouth, your reputation can be damaged very quickly. It takes a lot longer to build a great reputation. And so you've been, you know, been able to do that. And even when, like, nothing's going to go right all the time, but when it doesn't go right, how you handle it, right? Like with the lawsuit you mentioned, you were like, okay, let me fix this. Not, you know, you took it as an opportunity, it sounds like. So you should feel really good about those kinds of things. And I'm excited for your new paddles and for more sales. And I think, you know, of course, if there's anything we can do, like I said, we'll put all the links in the show notes, but I wish you continued success. And although it's probably hard to stop working to come and do some of these interviews, I do think that people buy products that they feel connected to brands. They really want to feel the connection and trust, because again, we can't see inside the paddle. We can't see the manufacturing process. We don't know, you know, what the quality standards are. And so to trust the business is huge. I'm sure you've heard some feedback about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a big part. I think a lot of people enjoyed putting a face to the brand, especially as a smaller company.
Yeah. Well, I wish you continued success. You can tell your dad that he did a good job on a lot of fronts, because he raised a great business person and a good guy. And like I said, I play with your paddle every day, so I look forward to more paddles coming out. So I'm not a paddle nerd. I'm just going to say I'm a paddle collector. I like to try out. but I really do love your paddle, because I needed a little bit of a lighter paddle, and I like the grip to not be enormous. Like for me, my hands are small and it just really is comfortable. So I've really enjoyed it, and good luck in the new paddles coming out. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. And then I also wish you the best of luck, you know, on your platform and also your main job as well.
Yeah, well, thank you. This is more fun to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, awesome. Okay, thank you, Daryl.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to Simply Pickleball. We will be back very soon with great interviews, discussions, and more all about pickleball. Don't forget to subscribe to our channels on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, or any of your favorite podcasting outlets. Until next time, happy dinking.